Alison Taylor, Real Five.
And we were in the station, our section, and we pulled out the next day. We got to town of Ibn Buren. I knew it would come, Ibn Buren, and we did a night attack on Ibn Buren, and the Manchesters were there up on a hill. The village, the town was down in the dip like a basin, the town of Verdon. And up on the hill here, when we were pulling forward, when we were coming forward to do the attack, we passed up on the right bank up here, on top of the bank, the Manchesters, and they, whole lot of Vickers guns were firing down into the village, into the town, I'm sorry, into the town, and they, as well as guns, 25 pounders, and I think, and these guns, these Vickers guns, funny enough, had nobody with them. They were firing away on 1,000 round belts, and they had nobody with them firing them, but they were jammed. There was a piece of wood jammed in behind the grips, which was holding the trigger down, in other words, firing the guns. And there's some on the top of this bank, there was some ten or 11 guns set up, pointing down to the village, to the town, and firing tracer. And we got down there, Germans had blown a bridge across the river, and meanwhile we were under fire, and we got in across the bridge, which had been damaged. Only infantry could get across, no trucks or armour or anything, because it was so badly damaged. And and going up this main road to the centre of Ibn Buren, there were spandos at the top in the square. They were firing down both sides of the road, alongside the pavement. They were firing 3 foot high from, and they were firing continuously with tracer. And we had to go up the pavement and stop. It was going past there. And we got up to the square. Sorry. And we found there was nobody behind those guns. They'd fled, because they just stopped before we got to the square. It was night time. They fled, left the guns there. And there were two women in the centre of the roundabout with rifles, and they were lying behind rifles, and they'd been shot. And we got into a house.
Were the women in uniform?
No, in civilian dresses. And they'd caught it, and I don't know whether the Vickers or whether, I mean, we had been firing, whether it was Vickers guns that got them, or the Germans, or us, I don't know. Anyway, they were both dead, but...
So they'd been firing rifles?
Oh, they'd been firing at us, yeah, in civilian clothes, and we got into this house, our section, and we threw a grenade in the front room. We went down the corridor, and we heard footsteps coming up the stairs from the cellar. And this German came up, the house owner, civilian clothes, and spoke perfect English. He used to work in London. And he got his wife down the cellar, and I think everything valuable, because all the rooms were empty in the house. Anyway, he came up and he was talking for a while, and we said that the SS had gone to the house next door, and that's before they pulled out. I'd gone to a house next door, and they'd said, because the woman next door was showing a white flag. And they said, what does this mean? And they shot her when she said it was meant they surrendered. And we pulled up further through the town, got in.
Who shot her?
The Germans, SS. And we got into, further up through the town, we were allocated houses for the night, the rest of the night. And we stayed there the night, and the, it was the Oxford Bucks came, I think. Came out through to relieve us, and just on the corner we were supposed to take, if we'd stayed in the advance, if we had stayed in the advance corner, we were supposed to take, and officer from the Oxford Bucks poked his head round the corner. Meanwhile, we were getting ready to pull back. And he, Germans opened up with a spandau, and he dodged back, and so did the lads, because there was heavy fire coming from a signal box of the station. And he goes out next moment in the middle of the crossroads. He says, stands there, and he says to his company, come on, lads. And he got the boys forward. They went forward in spite of this firing. And that was the last we saw them, because we pulled back. And we went out of Ebenbüren, we got into open ground there. We got up towards the Autobahn between Hamburg and Bremen. And the a small village called Brie. And we were stopping there the night, about 50 feet, 60 feet away from the bridge crossing the Autobahn, up in the field we were staying. And the ground was waterlogged, you couldn't dig a slit, so we had to take earth off, grass earth off, cut it up, and turf, in other words, and make a sort of shelter out of the turf. And it got dark, and there was a mighty bang, and the Germans had blown the bridge. Well, you know the size of the Autobahn bridges. They'd blown the bridge. And out of the sky comes lumps of bridge, concrete, every damn thing. And all we got was a few mounds of turf. And 13 or 14 Germans who'd carried out the blowing up of the bridge, they came up to us with their hands up. And we took them prisoner. And meanwhile, the story had spread round that about a ceasefire. And we were there the night. And we got orders to get down into trucks, troop carriers. And we were going for Hamburg. And we arrived in Hamburg. And took up positions, took up houses, buildings, I mean, to stay in. And ours was down in, our company one was down in the docks in Hamburg. 5 or 6 floors up, and there were already bunks there because it had been used by the German army, and we stayed there that night, and the Germans, we moved into the centre of Hamburg. We got down one of their wide streets, and we were put in sections, that's 2 or 3, all that was left of sections, 2 or 3, put into houses along this road. And there was a barracks at the bottom of the road, large German barracks, German army. And down the road came German soldiers, the width of the road, and as far back as you could see up the road, there were thousands of them, thousands. And we were the nearest, we were the furthest out section in that road in Hamburg, and as I say, they were making their way for the barracks down the road. And meanwhile, the German woman earlier, she'd given us, we'd sat in armchairs. In armchairs, the first we'd been in for. We sat in armchairs in her front room, and she bought us some ersatz coffee. And we went out when we heard this noise coming down this road. And as I say, thousands, thousands of them. There were officers in front and men right across the road, hide away, a wide city road, and back as far as you could see and coming. And then another lot, and then another lot. Always had some officers in front, and they looked at us and we looked at them, and I thought, well, got all these men and it's finishing. And then when they'd gone past, after about an hour, the German officer, there was a small pub, he called us across, and we went in and gave us free drink. And he says, when Hitler began, he said, we put, the SS came here and told me to put a portrait of the Führer up on the wall there, pointed to the spot. And she said, when they'd gone, and she said, I took it down, and it's not been up there since. And when you looked, it was, you could see where the thing had been just taken down, the colour of the wall and the position where the black mark sort of thing, where the picture had been. So he'd just taken it down. But Hamburg, we went to, they took us a night, this is after the war's over, they took us a night march up through that area of Hamburg that had been smashed. And we went hour and hour through the city, and there were only black, it was night time, there was the black building looking at you, and the gaping wall where the windows had been. And a bit of the moon shining through these gaping walls. And every now and again, some men or women would trot out of one bomb building, look at us, and trot back in again. And people in rooms with one wall missing entirely, and they were living in the room with one wall. Three walls, I mean, round them, and one wall missing entirely. And at a part of Hamburg where we were, it was not bombed. And everything standing, including all the, in the main square, all the theatres, which were opened later for us. And, but that part that was bombed, it was mile after mile of just ruins. All the streets had been cleared. There was nothing on the streets at all. They were all cleared. It was just the buildings. And as I say, we stayed in Hamburg till, when was it? It was the end of the war, was April, May, June, I think it was July. And we went down to, we were taken down to Solingen. In the Ruhr, and then we were taken to Brussels, and we were flown out to the Middle East, and arrived at Cairo, airport outside Cairo, and ended up in a camp by the pyramids. And we moved from there to outside Hamburg, Cairo. And
we were there. Is this still at First HLI?
Yes. We were taken down, we were taken up by train to Palestine, and by trucks up to Jerusalem, and we were in Jerusalem for some time, 6 months.
Were there any troubles there?
Yes, yes. Yes, blowing up and shootings and...
Were you involved in them?
Oh, you were on patrols. You were on patrols every night. Well, you might get a night off, but shootings and things, and then you had to look over your shoulder.
Were you in any incidents?
Well, not to... You know, they were always in the distance, or always seemed to be down another street sort of thing, and bangs and shootings, and we always went down armed. And we left before the King David Hotel was blown up. And 112 were killed there. British Army and workers, native workers. And they brought the explosives down in a milk truck, delivered the milk in milk churn with the explosives in the milk churn.
But you'd already left by then?
Yes. And they rolled the milk churns into the cellar, which they did every morning. The milk churns were rolled into the cellar, and with a time fuse, and they blew up and killed 112. And
where did you go to after Palestine?
We went down to Egypt, and we went to Cairo, and then to Suez. Well, we spent some months at Suez, and then we were put on the train back up to Palestine. And still explosions and shootings. And
were you back in Jerusalem?
Yes. Yes, we were back in Jerusalem, yeah.
Jaundice?
I got jaundice in Jerusalem. And I went down to the MO, and he was in the open air behind the desk, and I told him I didn't feel well. And he looked at me, my chest, I mean. Not with anything off, just my chest, dressed as I was, in uniform. He looked that height, I mean, at my chest. And he said, well, that was Saturday. He said, come and see me Monday. Gave me some tablets, and next, he said. So I leant over, I said, well, what about this? The pupils of my eyes were yellow. So he looked at me then. He says, oh my God, you've got jaundice. And I was up in the hospital on the Golan Heights in a short while, up on the Holy Mountain. I was up at the hospital there, and I was really hungry because I hadn't eaten properly for days. And what had happened is, one of the hospital attendants comes up with a plate full of food, nicely cooked. And I couldn't believe it. And I was able to eat the whole plate full. And put a plate on the side. And when the doctor came in with the nurse, he says, you haven't eaten a meal. I said, yeah. He said, well, you shouldn't have had it. So I said, well, the attendant brought it along to me, I had. And then I was put on in an ambulance to go up the top of Palestine,
You said it was someplace near Haifa, anyway.
Yeah, beginning with S, and it was right on the coast. And I used to walk after I got out of hospital. I used to walk down the beach here by myself, entirely by myself, and all peaceful and everything. And when I got back to, I was there 7 weeks, when I got back to Jerusalem, First one I met in camp was, it was night time. First one I met in camp was the Captain Creelman. Splendid chap. And he looked down inside my overcoat because it was so cold. I had to collar up and my head was more or less down inside the overcoat, great coat, and he pulls the front down and he says, is that you, Taylor? I said, yes. God, he said, we're moving down to Egypt tomorrow. He said, you've come at the right time. So I got all my stuff packed, left as it was, and we just onto the truck in the morning, and we were down to Egypt again. And we went to, we were back
at Suez?
We'd come back across the Sinai Desert in trucks. And a lot of the way, the road was covered by sand, so it meant you had to look where the devil's the road. Anyway, we got down there and we went to Suez, and went out on a exercise on the Sinai, on the desert, I mean,
Suez?
Suez, and the with the carriers and different things, and we fired the, they decided to have an exercise with the carriers, and one lot were friends, one lot were enemy, and they were firing 2-inch mortar bombs, and smoke ones, not the explosive ones, the smoke ones, 2-inch mortars. And they were coming down out of sight of the carriers. And a captain who'd, from another regiment next to us, had asked the major if he could come out with us on the exercise. And as I say, he was in one of the carriers, and we had these mortar bombs coming down, and got out of the carrier, got under the back to have some cover, and the carrier backed up and went over and killed him, and we got back out on the road some hours later, and by the docks at Suez, and these the MPs on the gate, and these two Arabs came out to come out of the camp, out of the docks, and the corporal policeman was he got his cane. And he gave them a tap between the legs, and there was a metallic clank, and he stopped the two of them, and he got them to pull down these baggy trousers, and out fell 5 or 6 tins of food, and he did the same with the other one, and out fell another lot of tins of food, which he was stealing, and he looked at us, he said, it's the same every day. Every day they come out of working in the docks. Not just these two, but so many. Every time they came out, they got these tins in their trousers. And we went up to, from Suez, we went up to Palestine again. And at a place called Rehoboth,